On that day, King Ahasuerus gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet and wept and pleaded with him to avert the evil plan of Haman the Agagite and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. For the king held out the golden scepter to Esther. Esther rose before the king, and she said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and if the king seems right before, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, which he wrote to destroy the Jews and who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming to my people? Or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows, because he intended to lay hands on the Jews. But you may write as you please with regard to the Jews, and in the name of the king, and seal it with the king's ring. For an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." The king's scribes were summoned at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And an edict was written according to all that Mordecai commanded concerning the Jews to the satraps and the governors and the officials of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces, to each province in its own script, to each people in its own language, and also to the Jews in their script in their language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed it with the king's signet ring. Then he sent the letters by mounted couriers riding on swift horses that were used in the king's service, bred from the royal stud, saying that the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to gather and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate any armed force of any people or province that might attack them, children and women included, and to plunder their goods, on one day throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. A copy of what was written was to be issued as a decree in every province, being publicly displayed to all peoples, and the Jews were to be ready on that day to take vengeance on their enemies. So the couriers, mounted on their swift horses that were used in the king's service, rode out hurriedly, urged by the king's command. And the decree was issued in Susa, the citadel. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown and a robe of fine linen and purple. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many from the peoples of the country declare themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. This is the word of the Lord.
Amen. Thank you, Tracy. I love these Goodman girls. Listen, Tracy and her sister, Jan, I want to give a shout out to them and to their daddy, because I want all of us to learn from, or we can all learn from this example, man. They moved here, take a job from Philadelphia, Man, they immediately got involved in our church, immediately. As soon as they got involved, they started serving. They serve in our student ministry. One of them, I think it's Jana, serves in a preschool, in a special needs ministry. And they immediately got involved. One day, I saw him walking down the hall, this big, tall guy. And I mean, it was their daddy, and I knew it was their daddy. And so I go up to him, and I meet their dad. And he's big, tall. They're from Philadelphia, the city of the brotherly shove, you know. And so I said, man, it's good to see you girls. I said, I hadn't seen y'all in about a month or two. And their dad, I'm telling you, he cut his eyes, and he looked at them girls. I knew he's serious. I said, "Oh, I'm kidding. They're here." Listen, he raised those girls, poured the Lord into those girls, and man, they are living it now as adults. So parents, stay with your kids, and man, stay pouring into your kids. I promise it will not return void. Also, man, you ladies, Jen Wilkin, her pastor, Matt Chandler, great friend of mine. You want to bring about 10 to 14 of your friends. I'll bring them all because she's phenomenal. Come and do that. And man, I want to say thanks to Michael Reed for leading our worship today. Michael is our worship pastor at our College Grove campus. And Michael is over today because Travis just needed a break. But although Travis needed a break, he did not take a break from church. Another thing we need to learn, he was here worshiping on the front row this morning. And so, man, he set an example for his kids. It's like you never take a break from church. And so thanks, Travis, for setting that example. Thanks, Michael, for leading us this morning. Now, we are in episode 8 of the book of Esther. And man, we're learning and I'm just learning and it's amazing. But this week, let me tell you something happened this week that's a great lead in to today's message. This week, you know, I have two dogs. If you've been around here for a while, I have a lab, and then we have a French bulldog. My lab's name is Deacon, and my French bulldog's name is Indigo. And man, I love these dogs. Deacon's my trained hunting dog, and man, I mean, we bonded together, and I mean, he's just my trained hunting dog. So Anna's here, and her boys, and so they were at the house Monday. I was leaving Monday morning to go to come to elder meeting, and I just jokingly, or for information, I looked at my dogs. I said, hey, y'all, just please take care of my dogs, right? So I come to elder meeting and I'm here and not long in, man, I get a call. Man, Deacon has gotten into some sugarless gum, a bag of sugarless gum. Now, the thing with sugarless gum is it's toxic to dogs. I mean, it's got xylitol or something in it that is toxic to dogs. And if they eat it, man, it'll kill them. It can kill them. And so she said he got into a bag and he ate at least half the bag, one of those small chip-sized bags of gum, and he threw a bunch of it up, but said his legs were wobbly and he was throwing up, so they put him outside and he couldn't hardly stand up. So I rush home. I'm like, man, my dog, I rush home. By the time I get there, he cannot even stand up. I yell at him when I go through the fence, and man, his tail's starting to wag. You know how dogs are, man. They're just so awesome. His tail wags, but he can't even stand up, man. His eyes are red. He's shaking. I pick him up. He's 110 pounds. We pick him up, throw him in my truck. I'm going at 100 miles an hour to the vet, running red lights and, you know, blowing my horn, getting people out of the way, because I'm thinking my dog's dying, in all honesty. And we get there, and we get almost there, and he starts seizing. He goes into a seizure, and he's yelping, and he's just crying really loud, and he falls in the floorboard, and I think my dog's dead. And man, I'm crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, my dog's dead. And so I pull in the vet on two wheels. I bust through their door, and I said, y'all get in here, out here, and help me get my dog in here, you see? So they come out, rush him in, put him in a, IVs in him, and then they put him in an ice bath, and the vet comes out and says, basically, he's having a heat stroke, and I thought he was dead. We got him here, and I literally thought he was dead. And so long story short, the vet calls me about 4 that day and says, hey, you can come and get your dog. He's fine. He's going to make it. And so now he come home, started eating everything again. He's perfectly fine. Here's the lead in for today, why this is important. Because, man, things were really bad. I thought he was dead. Things were really bad, and all of a sudden they turned, right? That can happen in your life at any moment, no matter what you're going through right now. No matter what life throws at you, and it might be terrible, it can turn like that. So don't ever give up hope. That's what we're going to see in the book of Esther today. We're going to see that things can turn on a dime. Things can turn in a moment. Okay? And so remember, last week, Esther made this bold revelation. She revealed that Haman, to the king, her husband, she revealed that Haman had made this wicked plot to exterminate, ethnically cleanse the Jews from all of the kingdom. And when she did this, she revealed this, and the king realized that he had been duped, that his signet ring was used, and he didn't even know what people they were exterminating. And so Esther reveals that he has got this wicked plan, and the king is so upset with him. If you'll remember, he actually hangs Haman, his number two, on the gallows that Haman had built the night before, on which he wanted to hang Mordecai, who's arch nemesis. So now Haman hangs. Things can change in a moment. Haman is one moment on top of the world. The next moment, man, he is hanging from the gallows. Things can turn. Things can change. And so now Esther, after Haman is dead, she makes another big reveal. She reveals that she's a Jew. She reveals that this Mordecai, whom that Haman was going to murder and hang, is her cousin. And she's very, very close to him, because not only is he her cousin, but he also has basically raised her as his daughter, because her parents died when she was young. And so they're very, very close. But she says, but it gets better, King. He's the one, the informant who informed about the plot to take your life, if you'll remember, from the two eunuchs who were guarding your threshold. And so he saved your life. He is an important advisor to both me and you. The king's very happy. Remember, he's just been up all night the night before having the book of royal records read, and he's been told about this Mordecai, and what should I do? And he had Haman to actually honor him. And now he's being told again that he's basically the cousin father of his queen. And so he gives Mordecai the number two position in the land, which belonged to Haman. Things can change in a moment. Haman's in control. Haman's the number two. Now he's hanging and Mordecai is the number two. He's got the signet ring that Haman wore. Now he's got power. He's got authority. And so things, folks, can change in a moment. And then verse 1 says that the king plundered all that Haman had. He plundered it and gave it to Esther, his wife, his kids, his servants, his house, his land, his possessions, his bling, all the things he had. Every bit of it went straight to Esther. Esther's now a very wealthy woman because Haman was a very wealthy man. And she owns everything he has. And so what does she do? She turns around and she gives it to Haman to steward on her behalf. Now, what is a steward? A steward doesn't own the possessions, but he manages the possessions for the owner. And his job is to manage these possessions. It's sort of like your financial advisor, your financial management who takes your money, and their job is to manage it in a way that makes you more money. Well, that's what a steward is. So they're basically the steward of your money. And so let me give you a point of illustration here that everything we have, we've been given by our king. It's not ours. Everything we have, our money, our house, our cars, our relationships, our husband, our wife, our kids, our jobs, everything we have, our cars, is not really ours. It's a misnomer to say my house, my cars. Yes, God has given them into our care. We live in them, but they are God's. He gave them to us to manage, to steward for his kingdom, for his benefit. And because you, as this church, are great stewards as a whole, we are able to send over 500 and some kids to camp, 150 adults, and man, many of those kids will get saved. God's gonna call many of them to be pastors. God's gonna call many of them to walk deeper with him. God's gonna bring some of them out of pornography addiction. God's gonna bring some of them out of toxic relationships because you are a great steward of God's money. We did Vacation Bible School because you're a good steward of God's money. Many kids got saved. Many families will be eternally affected because you're a good steward. Please continue to steward not just your money, but your life and your time, everything you have for the glory of God. So now Haman's dead, but here's the problem. His edict to destroy the Jews is still in effect. But why? Because the law could not be revoked. That was the law of the Medes and the Persians. A law that was written was in stone and it could not be revoked. So what's Esther going to do? Haman's dead, but the law's in effect. Judgment day's coming. Death day's coming for the Jews. What is she going to do? What she does in this chapter, I think, is so relevant for us today, because what she does, we need to be doing, because we and our people all around us are in the same position as the people in Esther 8. Let me explain. We're going to see three things in Esther 8 that I think we're going to see Esther do something, we're going to see Mordecai do something, we're going to see the Jews do something that we all need to be doing. First, we're going to look at Esther's desperation. Esther's desperation. Notice in verse 3, Esther, it says, fell weeping at the king's feet, pleading with him about the people. Now, this is way different. This is radically different than the Esther we've seen before. The Esther we've seen before is a very calculated woman. She doesn't come in half-cocked. She's not emotional. If you'll remember, when she goes before the king to plead, or when she goes before the king to do something, when Mordecai challenges her and says, you're here for such a time as this, Esther, when she does that, she doesn't go in half-cocked and just spill out. When he asked her what she wanted, he would give it to her. She doesn't just go in and say, man, Haman did this, Haman's doing that, you need to take care of it. She says, I'd just like for you to come to dinner, you and bring Haman with you and come to a dinner party. We'll do dinner tonight. He comes to dinner. He does that. And he says, what can I do for you? I'll do it. And she says, again, come back to dinner tomorrow. So she's calculating. She's smart. She's in control. She's not emotional. But here, way different. Esther. I mean, this woman's ugly crying on the feet and the robe of the king. She falls at his feet. She's pleading with him. She's weeping, ugly crying. Why? Because she is desperately concerned that her people are about to be annihilated. She's desperately concerned for the plight of her people. Let me ask you something. When was the last time you literally pleaded with God to save someone you know? When was the last time you pleaded, maybe even with tears, God, save my granddaddy, save my daddy, my mama, my grandmama, save my husband, my wife, save my kids, save the person that sits next to me in this class, or my good friend, or save my coworker. When's the last time you pleaded with God to save someone? I believe, including myself, we could all ask God to help us in this area, to be more passionate about the souls of people, the eternal souls of the people around us. We all could be better, because listen, you can know more scripture than Billy Graham or any seminary professor. You can know more scripture than anybody in this church. Some of you may know more scripture than anybody in this church, but if you are not passionate and concerned about the eternal souls of your family members and your friends and the people around you, then your theology and your discipleship is deficient in some place, some way. Right? I mean, your theology is deficient if, in your discipleship, if we're not concerned about people. I mean, it doesn't mean that we ugly cry before our God every time we go to him. That's not what it means. But if we're not concerned about the eternal destinies, as Esther was concerned about her people's judgment day was coming, and she was concerned, if we're not concerned because judgment day is coming, then something is wrong. God is the only one who can do anything about this. You see, Esther was pleading with the only one who could do anything about it, the king. She couldn't do anything about it. Mordecai couldn't do anything about it. It was only the king. She went to the king and she was pleading because only the king could save the Jews from their impending death. We go to God because only God can save our friends and our family and our coworkers. Only God. You can't save them. That's why we continually tell you that this is not on you, that you can't mess it up. You're not going to save anyone. They're not going to save themselves. They can't do that. They can't earn it. They can't buy it. They can't manipulate God into it. Only God can save. So we do need to talk to our friends about the gospel. We need to talk to our coworkers and people that we don't know. And we need to talk to them about the gospel, but only God can save them. So we need to actually talk to God more about their salvation than we talk to them about their salvation, because it's God who's going to save them, right? And so do you plead with God? Today we need to learn that there's a judgment day that's coming. There is a judgment day that's coming, just like with the Jews, except it's not just their physical annihilation. It's not just their physical extermination. It's the extermination of their souls, of the people around us who don't know the Lord. And we need to be pleading with God. That's why we passed out these bracelets this morning. Ryan led you to pick a bracelet, man, and we asked that you would pray and plead with God every day for the student that's on your bracelet. Some of you know the student that's on your bracelet. I happen to know. I got a bracelet this morning, and it just so happens to be Eli Garrett, Ryan Megan's son. And so I'm going to pray for Eli this week. Now, you may or may not know the person that you're praying for, and that's okay, because God knows them. He knows everyone, right? And so you're praying for them, and if you don't know them, you need to be praying, God, if they're not saved, would you please save them? God, if they're not saved, that's your prayer, would you please save them? Help them to not sleep at night. God, help them to be convicted of their sin. God, open their eyes to the gospel. Only you can do that. We've got Scott Long, a friend of mine, a great dude that's going to be preaching. We've got a great band, but they're not going to save anybody. It's only God. So ask God, God, would you convict? Would you say? Would you open the student's eyes if they're not a believer? God, if they are a believer, would you bring them to a deeper point of sanctification this week? Make them more like you. Do something in their life. Break them free from some kind of an addiction, maybe to pornography. Bring them out of a toxic relationship. Help them to be called to serve you in ministry or in their vocation. I pray that that student's life is radically changed. Listen, you need to pray for all of our students this week, really, because there's going to be a lot of detox going on tomorrow. I mean, our kids are going to be down here at, I don't know, whatever time, but they're going to get on a bus and they're going to leave and they're going to drive 2 hours down to below Chattanooga. And on the Ocoee and at an incredible encampment. And before they get there, there's going to already start a lot of detox. I mean, shaking. And I'm not talking about drugs. I don't know how many of our kids are on drugs, but they're going to be detoxing because they're not going to have their phone. Okay. Now think about this. When's the last time your kid didn't have their phone? If they went to camp last year, that's the last time they didn't have their phone. And so, man, they live on their phone. And so here's what you're going to see. I bet if we had cameras in all the cabins, and we're not parents, okay? No cameras in the cabins. But if we had cameras in the cabins at nighttime and it showed our kids asleep, you'd begin to see in their sleep, they're going to be going. Man, they got to detox. You pray for our kids, pray for our adults. They're going to have a great week. But you pray for the student, would you? That God, if you plead with God to do something in their life, plead with God to save your friend or your mama or your daddy or whomever in your life, your neighbor, your coworker, plead with God to save unreached people groups all over the world. Plead with God to save people. That's the heart of God. It should be our heart. Here's the second thing we see. We don't only see Esther's desperation. We see Mordecai's declaration. You see, Xerxes, he allowed Mordecai to write a new declaration, a new law, so to speak. It was really a new law. It was a new declaration, and he let him write it in his name and seal it with his signet ring. And what he did was he wrote a new law that basically said that the Jews could defend themselves against any attackers that came their way on Judgment Day, that the Jews could defend themselves. Now, this was really good news because, as I said, the law of the Medes and the Persians stated that no law that was in effect could be reversed. So it could not be revoked. So the law was there and it could not be revoked, but there was a loophole. The king could, even though he couldn't revoke that law, he could write a new law that would counteract the old law. And that's great news because that's exactly what Mordecai did. He wrote a law that would counteract the first law. And he called in the scribes and he wrote this law. And then here's what he did. Notice what he did. He called in couriers and the best couriers. And it wasn't just any horse that he put them on. He put them on horses that were sired by the king's stud, which means the best, fastest horse in all the land sired all of these horses that he got these horses and said, go and go quickly. And if you look at the word swiftly or hurry, it's used multiple times. The point there was an urgency about this declaration. There was an urgency about it. The judgment day is coming quickly. If something doesn't happen, these people are going to be annihilated. There is an urgency. Mordecai didn't just say, oh man, we'll get to it next year, next session. When we're in session next time, I'll get to it. He didn't just say, man, I'll worry about that later. Today I got this and I don't want to tick the king off by asking him something else. I mean, I don't want to, man, there was an urgency about getting this news out to the people. Folks, not only do we need to passionately plead and intercede for God to save people that we know, people that we don't know that don't know him, we need to urgently proclaim the good news. We need to plead with God to save people, and we need to urgently tell people about the God we're asking to save them. Right? I mean, we need to urgently proclaim the gospel. There's a way of escape of eternal death and separation from our good king. We need to proclaim this. This is why you've been put in your workplace. You know, you're not where you are by chance. You're not where you are by the luck of the draw. You're not where you are because, man, you got a job and moved here. You know, I was just talking to a lady out in the hallway after, in between services, and she is from Louisiana and flew up to visit someone. She was here this morning. That wasn't by chance. She was at church because she flew up to visit some family, and she was at church. That wasn't by chance. Nothing you do is by chance. Remember, we've been talking about the providence of God, the sovereignty and the providence of God. His sovereignty means he is in complete control. His providence says that he makes all things happen. He's moving the pieces around to bring about his sovereign will, right? And so God, you're not where you are just because you got a job here, just because of what you're here by the hand and the plan of God in this very moment. And he has you where you are for such a time as this. And such a time as this is always now. It's not tomorrow and it's not later. It's always today. And he has you in your workplace. He has you in your neighborhood. He has you in your house. He has you in the circle. He has you in all these places for such a time as this, to proclaim urgently the gospel, the good news that there is a new law, the good news, because people are under an edict that God declared that the price for sin is death and separation from him. And we need to urgently declare the good news to these people. That's why you are where you are right now, for such a time as this. It's not just for Esther, it's for you. That's where you are. In verse 5, Esther says to the king, notice what she says here, if it's pleasing to you, and if I have found favor, and if it seems right, and if I'm pleasing to you. Do you notice what she's saying? If it's pleasing, if I found favor, if I'm pleasing to you, what's she doing? She's reminding the king who she is. In other words, she's reminding the king of their relationship. She knows she's got a task to do, and she's leveraging their relationship in order to do it. She's using their relationship. You've heard it said, probably, it doesn't matter what you know, it matters who you know. You've heard that, right? You go get a job, it matters who you know. You want something done, it matters who you know. And that's exactly correct. That's what we see here. Esther's the queen. God put her in that position. She's got influence with the king. She's got influence with those around her. And she's leveraging that influence to save the people. Listen, that's exactly you. You've got in relationships, and all your relationships God's put in your pathway and in your life for you to leverage for his kingdom. There might be times, and there will be times, when you might need to share the gospel on the plane, sitting beside someone you never met. There's time for that. And when that happens, lay it all on the line and go for it. You're never going to see that person again, probably. Right? You got nothing to lose. There's going to be times when you need to urgently share the gospel with somebody you never met. But understand, and you need to be ready in season, out of season, so you need that. But understand, we need to leverage every relationship we have, because that's the most effective way of evangelism. Let me give you an example. Man, I had Verizon for years. Now I had Verizon. And all of a sudden, my service started to go down, but man, my price started to go up with Verizon. And I was like, man, I don't know what's going on. But I had all these AT&T salesmen that would come to my door. Seemed like AT&T was the only one that did that. AT&T would come to my door, I don't know how, I mean, one a month at least. Some young man knock on my door, and I, honestly, I'm just gonna tell you what I do. And I open the door, I see it's an AT&T, and he'd start, and I'd say, whoop, don't need to hear it, don't wanna hear it, I wanna save your time. I ain't buying anything from you, don't know you. That's just my rule. I don't know you. If you come to my door, I don't care what it is, I ain't buying it. That's just my rule. I ain't buying it, okay? And so I don't know you. I know you've got 40 pounds of gold, and man, just by some miracle, you're gonna give it to me for $10. It's the best deal ever. But I ain't taking it, okay? And you're gonna tell me it's gotta be done today, and if any salesman ever says, but you gotta make this today, I'm like, then you're out and I'm out. I ain't doing it. You ain't pulling that on me. So I don't do door-to-door people I don't know. I don't do that. So here's what happened. I had all these AT&T salesmen come, and I'd just stop them, and I'd say, there's no sense in going into your spiel. You're gonna waste your time, because I'm not buying anything from you. I don't know you. And so, you don't drink water, I'll give it to you, but I'm not buying anything from you. So my nephew, Jeremy Norris, who goes to church here, he calls me one day, and he's like, hey man, we just got brand new phones, and we swapped AT&T. And I'm like, AT&T? Why'd you swap to AT&T? Man, you ought to see, I mean, and then he becomes an AT&T evangelist. He starts telling me about the good news of AT&T. I mean, he starts telling me about the coverage is better. He starts telling me about the plan, and then the thing that spoke to my heart. I saved $100 a month. I said, stop now, I accept AT&T. He becomes this AT&T evangelist. And when he started telling me, I wanted to hear everything about it. Why? Tell me more. I was interested. Why? Because I knew this guy. Because I knew this guy. He had influence with me, right? So what did we do? We swapped AT&T, saved $100 a month on my bill. You know what I did? I come into the office, I become an AT&T evangelist. Now, most of our elders have first AT&T. Ryan Garrett, started telling him, he swapped AT&T, swapped AT&T. Peyton Bullitt, he swapped AT&T. Kyle Gowen, he swapped AT&T. That's a great example of the power of influence. That's a great example. They would have never listened to anyone that come to their door. But I knew Jeremy. They knew Jeremy. They knew me. It's the power of influence, folks. We need to be using our influence. That's what she's doing. She's using her influence to save the Jews. We need to be using our influence. Now, also, you need to share on the plane. You need to share someone, you know, but you need to use your influence. It doesn't matter what you know. It's who you know. Listen, and don't ever fight that. People always say that it's a negative. It's the greatest thing ever. Why? Because that's how you get into heaven. You go with it. You can know all the Bible in the world. You know, you don't know Jesus. You ain't getting into heaven. It's not what you know. It's who you know, right? And so go with it. It's what it is. And so leverage your influence for the gospel. How do we do this, man? With our, we call it neighbors and nations, right? We're passionate about your neighbors, and you go to your neighbors, and you start, you know, man, you might throw a block party. It's summertime. Have them over to your pool. Throw a barbecue in your backyard. Have a tea, and tell them who you are. Tell them what you're doing, man. Invite them to church. I typically start with things like, hey, man, you know, they know who I am. It's a little different. So it's like, hey, man, you go to church anywhere? And I'm not doing it just to invite them to church, although I will, but I'm trying to gauge their spiritual interest. You go to church anywhere? Or maybe it's like, hey, man, tell me, you know, you're a pastor? Yeah, I'm a pastor. Like, by the way, well, what do you think about spiritual things? I just want to ask them a question where they will answer and I can gauge their spiritual interest off of that. So if I ask someone those questions and they're just shut down, cold, man, I don't want to talk about that. You know what I do? I'm like, hey, bro, great. Spirit of the Lord's not working here, obviously, right now. He's not convicting. And if I keep talking, it's just throwing pearl before swine. So I'm like, hey, man, you know who I am, what I do. Call me if I can help you anytime, and let's go fishing, whatever. But man, if there's a door, you begin to sense if the door's open, you just keep walking through that door. And it might take time. But neighbors, nations, man, we share the gospel at College Grove. We share the gospel at Riverdale. We share the gospel at Stewart's Creek. We're sharing the gospel in Belgium. We had Brian Van Ranken up last week, Van Ranken too. Lead worship. He's our worship pastor in Belgium. He needs funding. You're a good steward. You generously give. He goes to Belgium, right? I mean, we share the gospel in Thailand. We share the gospel in the favelas of Brazil. We share the gospel to our neighbors and to our nations. Are you doing it personally to your friends? It's not an option. It's not for the pastors. It's not for the varsity Christian. It's for every believer to go and make disciples. Are you desperate pleading before the king for lost people? And are you urgently sharing? And then finally, we see the Jews' celebration. We see Esther's desperation. We see Mordecai's declaration, and we see the Jews' celebration. After the couriers rush off, notice what Mordecai did. Mordecai goes out through the king's gate into the courtyard. Remember the last time he was in the courtyard, what he was doing? He was wearing sackcloth and ashes, and he was mourning and weeping, because sackcloth and ashes were a sign of mourning and weeping. That was his state the last time he was in the courtyard. Now he walks out into the courtyard, and he's got on royal robes and a crown on his head. And I mean, man, he's a completely different person. And he is joyful and wearing these robes. And he didn't take this by force. He didn't manipulate the king to get it. He didn't buy his way from mourning from sadness to gladness, and from crying to joy. He didn't buy that. The king gave it to him. The king gave it to him, right? And so also notice the joy of the Jews in Susa. It wasn't just Mordecai who was joyful, but the Jews, they saw Mordecai, right? I mean, they received this good news, and then they see Mordecai, who was to be hung on the gallows just a few hours earlier. Now Haman's hanging from those gallows, and Mordecai's walking through town in the royal robes, the crown on his head, and the signet ring on. And it says that, notice how it described them. They're shouting, they're rejoicing, they're full of light and joy and gladness and honor, throwing a feast and full of holiday spirit. Man, what a complete contrast from chapter 3, when they received Haman's law and were confused and weeping and mourning. And what a contrast. What a contrast. So what do we see? Man, we see that those who share the gospel, basically, we see those who make the declaration are incredibly full of joy when people are saved. You know, I promise you, here's the thing. If you make a declaration, let me tell you some things that are truthful and hopefully will help you take some pressure off. If you, as a believer, share the gospel regularly, you're doing good if you bat 100. Right now, you're going to watch the Vols got beat last night in the World Series, and man, they're in the World Series. And you know, in baseball, if you bat 300, if you bat 300 consistently, you're signing a multi-million dollar contract. If you can't catch a ball, I mean, if you as anybody, if man, somebody hits a ball to you, if somebody tosses you a ball softly and you can't catch it and hit you in the head, you can't catch a ball. If you can pick up a ball and you can't throw the ball, but you can bat 300, you're signing a multi-million dollar Major League Baseball contract. Okay? Because you can hit the ball. Right? Well, 300 is good in baseball. 300 is failing in anything else, right? 30% is failing in anything else, but it's good in baseball. Sharing the gospel? If you bat 100, if one out of 10 people say, yes, I want Jesus, you are knocking it out of the park. I'm saying that to say, just understand, most people's gonna say no. That hopefully that'll take some pressure off, all right? Don't expect everybody to say yeah. That's not gonna happen. But when they do, here's what Mordecai does. There is no greater feeling than seeing somebody saved, right? I mean, man, if you've ever led anybody, if you've ever been in a room or used in the process when God saves someone, then you know what kind of ecstatic joy overcomes your soul. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in the room when your kids are born, Dad, but when you are in that room when your kids are born and you're there and it's like, oh my God, it's like this, you don't know what to do. You're passing out. You're sick. You're joyful. I mean, you got all these emotions and then the baby's born and baby's crying and mom's healthy and baby's healthy and happy. And I mean, you're ecstatic. That's exactly the only feeling close to it when someone comes to know Jesus, because it's the exact same process. You've got a baby being born physically into this world, and now when someone gives their life to Jesus, you've got a brand new reborn person. It's a brand new birth, and it's exciting because you were used by God to be a part of that, and there's no greater joy. That's what Mordecai's feeling. Sadly, most Christians never feel that joy. Why? Because sadly, most Christians don't share the declaration of the good news, but there's no greater feeling. Then, you see the Jews celebrating because why? Man, when you're saved, when you come to the realization, I was as good as dead a moment ago, and today I'm alive. I had no future, and today, right now, I've got my whole future ahead of me. I had zero meaning because life was over. Now my life is full of meaning. When you are saved, wow. Man, when you're truly saved, you know what? There's joy. There is an immense amount of joy. That's what we see, a celebration. Isn't that what the Bible talks about? I mean, the Bible talks about, man, how the angels, there's rejoicing in heaven when one comes to know the Lord. Listen, man, I think we ought to be people who keep parties rolling in heaven because of our obedience. God's going to save, but man, we can be people who keep celebrations going. That's what happens, man, when the gospel is shared and you're successful. You know what we're going to do? If you come into my office and you tell me, man, I shared the gospel today, and you ain't gonna believe this, Pat. This happens. I shared the gospel today, and someone come to know the Lord. I'm like, bravo, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. You were successful. You come into my office and say, Pat, I shared the gospel today, and a guy punched me in the nose. You know what I'm gonna do? Bravo, you were successful. Your success is not whether somebody's response. Your success is your obedience. Man, we'll celebrate that with you as a church. If you share the gospel, we're gonna celebrate. No matter what people do, we're gonna celebrate your sanctification and your growth and you walking with the Lord. We should celebrate that with each other. The success is not somebody coming across the line of faith. That's up to the Lord. The success for you is just being obedient. So will you today be obedient? Will you begin to share the gospel? Look at what Hebrews 7:25 says. He is able to save the uttermost, to the uttermost. Uttermost, did you get that? To the uttermost. Those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. You're not on your own. This is the Lord doing this through you. Right? Look at what Revelation 7:9 says. Because you see, Mordecai went out wearing these royal robes, and people who give their life to Christ, they don't wear royal robes. They're not clothed in royal robes. We're clothed in the righteousness of Christ. They're clothed in the righteousness of Christ, covered by the blood of his death, washed clean in white robes, and one day we'll experience an altogether greater celebration around the throne of God. Look at what Revelation 7, 9, and 10 says. After this is John writing from the Isle of Patmos where they put him because they couldn't kill him. They put him here to destroy his influence. And this is where he wrote this. That's got eternal influence. He says, after this, I looked and behold, a great multitude that no one could number. Folks, heaven's not sparsely populated. That no one could number. From every nation, tribe, people's languages. Heaven's not monochromatic, monolithic. Heaven is multicolored, multi-ethnic. Heaven is full. And here's what it says. Standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands. Now, I don't want you to get the idea. You know, we read Revelation. And remember, it's apocryphal language, and I don't want you to read Revelation and think that means that, well, you know, people in heaven right now, you know, they're wearing white robes, man, and they're standing around and just singing hymns all day. That's not what's happening in heaven. Okay, this is a deeper, longer message, but heaven is a new earth. Heaven's very similar to where we are right now. I mean, except perfection. You know, it's very much like and very much unlike is the only way I know how to describe it. But we're not wearing white robes and floating on clouds, and Travis is not going to be in a diaper playing a harp for you, leading you in worship. Okay, praise God, I don't want to see Travis in a diaper. That's not what heaven is, okay? It's not what heaven is. We're not wearing white robes in heaven. This is symbolic language. The white robes means we are righteous. That's a symbol for being clothed in righteousness. We're righteous before God. We're righteous before God now. If you're a believer, I'm righteous before God. I don't always act righteous, but that's my standing before God. I'm clothed in his righteousness, and I'm waving a palm branch. And what do? You're honoring, completely honoring the Lord like you want to do today, but you can't because of the indwelling sin. But that's what your heart wants to do if you're a believer. But you're like Paul, man. It's like, what I don't want to do is what I do, and what I do is what I don't want to do. And oh, wretched man am I. You know, I mean, Paul's got this struggle just like you have, like I have. It's like, I want to obey Christ. I want to walk with him, but I've got this indwelling sin that's still there that causes me to go, oh my God, sometimes pulls me away in this temptation. No more in heaven. I'm honoring Christ in everything I do. That's the picture that we're given. Crying out with a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. This greater celebration one day. This greater celebration. So we see the desperation of Esther, the declaration of Mordecai, and the celebration of the Jews. And today, I hope all of those apply to you. You see that all of those, man, we need to be desperate about lost people. We need to be declaring the gospel to lost people. And man, we need to celebrate when people do that. And we want to celebrate you. Maybe today you're here and you are not a believer in Jesus Christ, but today you've heard the gospel that you are under a death edict. You are under a death edict. It was established by God all the way back in the Garden of Eden when he told Adam and Eve, do not eat from the tree in the middle of the garden. All the others you can eat from, but not the tree in the middle, or you, for when you do, you will die. They did, they died. Physically, yes, later, but spiritually, immediately. Romans says the wage of sin is death. That's the death edict by God against sin, and we're all sinners. So here's the bad news. The reality is you're born a sinner. You're born separated from God. There's nothing you can do to earn your way back to God. You're doomed for hell because of your sin, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't save yourself. Bad news. But here's the good news. You don't have to do anything about it because Jesus did. He lived a perfect life that you didn't live, so that he could satisfactorily die the death that we deserve, come back from the dead and give you his righteousness, clothed in white robes, take from you your nasty robes of sin. Doesn't mean we don't sin. It just means our standing before God is righteous. And because it wasn't on what I did, but what Jesus did, it means I can never lose that because I did nothing to gain it. He gave it to me. I'm double bagged, so to speak. I'm sealed with the Holy Spirit. I'm sealed with God. There's nothing I can do to lose it. That's the gospel. And today, if you don't know him, if you're watching online, anywhere in the world, and you want to, man, I want that. I want to celebrate new life because I don't have life. Text the word Jesus to the number on the screen, and we will gladly call you. If you're in the room, we're here. People every week come back and say, man, I want to know how I can be brought from death to life. today. That's for those who are non-believers. If you're a believer, man, take a bracelet. Pray for kids this week. We're also going to ask you this week as an application point to fast, as we did for Vacation Bible School, but fast from lunch, if you can, Monday through Thursday. Just for lunch, and during your lunch, typically mine when you might eat or whatever, man, that's when you're pleading for that kid, that student that's on your wrist. Some of you, man, maybe dietary restrictions, can't fast from food, but you can fast from social media, the internet, or whatever you do, and take time to say, hey, God, please save or sanctify this student this week in camp. Do great things. So would you pray for them? Would you fast during lunch? You can eat breakfast. You can eat fast during lunch if you can. If not, because dietary restrictions, figure out how else you can do that. And urgently pray this week, write down, if you don't already, two or three people or four or five or 10 or 20 that you know that are not walking with the Lord so that you can desperately begin to pray for those people to get saved, to know Jesus. Now, here's what happens. When you're praying for that person, you talk to God about them a whole lot more than you talk to them about God, because only God can save them. Then you do talk to them about God, but you talk to God. Here's just the funny thing that happens. When you begin to talk to someone about someone, when you begin to talk to God about someone's salvation, God just miraculously begins to put opportunities in your way, and they're there, and he begins to open your eyes to, right now I need to say something. So would you begin to pray for 1, 2, 5, 10 people that you know, write them down and begin to plead for God to save them. Would you do that? Here's what I want to do right now. Here's how we're going to end our service today. A little bit different. We typically end with singing and response, but here's how we're going to end today. We're going to end by reading the word together. I want us to all stand up, and if we can stand up, and we're going to read the word together. This is a passage that's near and dear to our hearts at LifePoint. It is a theme. It's the theme of our motto. It's the theme of our motto, and it defines who we are, what we're about, and what we want to do as a church. Right here, this passage. So I want us to read it together. It's Romans chapter 10, verses 8 through 15. And I want us to read this together as our closing out our service, okay? So I'll start and let's all read this together, if you will. And if you're not a believer and you don't want to read, that's okay. Just listen and read to yourself, okay? But if you're a believer, let's read this together. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith that we proclaim. Because if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart, one believes and is justified. And with the mouth, one confesses and is saved. For the scripture says, everyone who believes in him will not be put to shame. For there is no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord is Lord of all, bestowing his riches on all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they've never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. Folks, go and live sent so that people can find life. God bless you. We love you, church. Come back next week for episode 9. Have a great week.